Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. And welcome to the 223rd edition of Money Matters, today's show, New Year's Tidings. Beware that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge. This station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money matters. This is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our life and livelihood. In short, money matters is about you. So a lot happening in the markets. Of course, the Federal Reserve came out yesterday, and the first time in almost a decade, raised the interest rate 0.25%. The Federal Reserve Chief Officer Janet Yellen raised it 0.25%. And raise the Fed funds rate from 0.75 to 1%. And they'd been threatening to do this for quite some time. As you know from listening to this show and reading your economic news, they finally did it. Now, analysts were expecting this as a whole. About 80-something percent expected her to raise 0.25% or so, and she did. And she came out with a variety of statements, basically saying why she did it, and no promises from her on whether they will continue to do it or not. The market kind of jumped around a little bit yesterday, which was December 16th. And the target for the overnight interest rate, the Fed's going to aim for 0.25 to 0.5%. And the Fed's will also maintain the size of its $4.4 trillion balance sheet, which is largely composed of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities that are guaranteed by the U.S. government. That out from Yahoo. When the Fed's bonds that they hold will mature, they will be rolled over, meaning the Feds will buy new bonds to replace them. The move was expected, says Yahoo, but had the Fed decided to let the bonds roll off its balance sheet when they matured, this would have possibly provided some stress to the bond markets and cause rates to spike further. Interest rates on reserves was raised to 0.25 to 0.5%. This determines the amount of interest the Feds pay bank to keep their money sterilized out of the company and out of the economy and stashed at the Fed. That's an interesting maneuver, in my opinion. Therefore, by raising the interest rate that the Feds pay to banks, banks are encouraged to keep as much money as at the Fed as possible to earn a risk-free 0.5% interest. Now, the Feds say that they want to spur up to 2% inflation. So it is puzzling, at least to me, why they are paying 0.5% interest rate to have the banks keep the money at the Fed. So basically, a lot of the money that they have been, quote, printing or applying in quantitative easing is not going out in the economy because it's kept at the Fed, and the Fed just encouraged that a little bit more by raising the interest they pay to that money at the Fed. by 0.25% from 0.25 to 0.50. Again, all this from Yahoo. So it's interesting. It's interesting. Also from Yahoo, the Fed will conduct longer-term operations to drain money as well, using a so-called term deposit facility it set up in 2010. So the market up and then down, and yesterday ended up 200-something. And today, what's the market doing today? Thursday, December 17th. Market is down 168, S&P down 20, NASDAQ down 45. So apparently still stuck in the range bound between 17,250 and 17,900 and some change, where it's been bouncing for at least the last few months for sure. So it's going to be interesting what happens here. How will the markets react? Well, yesterday, favorably. Yesterday, not so favorably. We'll have to keep an eye on it. Volatility is up a little bit, as you can see, from 168-point drop today and a 200-something-point rise tomorrow. So it begs the question, is there trouble ahead for the bond market? Now, as we mentioned many times, bonds are simply IOUs. I know a lot of people are confused about bonds, but it is. They're just simply IOUs. You give someone your money and they write you a promise to pay. The terms and the interest they pay, if any interest, are up to the lender and the borrower. Don't like the terms? Don't lend them your money, which is don't buy the bond. The bond market is one of the largest, if not the largest, market on the planet. I like to think of it as a feeding trough of commerce, where lenders and borrowers get together to furnish the funds to make the world go around. But bonds are an asset class onto their own, like stocks, which is also its own asset class, different than bonds. No matter how many bonds you own, you are still in the only one asset class called bonds, and therefore subject to the movements in the entire group. A good example of what I mean by being subject to the move of the entire group would be a stock market crash scenario. We know this in investing as market risk. Now, market risk is not risk of a particular stock crashing because of bad earnings or something. Market risk is basically saying that your stock could crash because the rest of the stocks do, which is what you mean by we're saying you're in one asset class. When you're in stocks, you're subject to market risk, which is the whole market going down. Even if the company might be a favorable company in your eyes, it would possibly still go down because the whole market goes down. In the scenario of a market risk or market crash, no matter what stocks you own or how many, it's likely most, if not all, the stocks in the portfolio would go down in concert with the market, known as market risk. Now, bonds can behave in the same way. Since all bonds are debt, if investors get spooked by a series of defaults on one sector of bonds, for instance, the junk bond market, which is the high yield market, that's bonds issued to lower rated borrowers. If a series of defaults on one sector of bonds happens, the entire bond market can start to rattle and roll, much like the entire bond market did in 2008-2009. When bond markets do start to rattle and roll, when bond markets get stressed, bond prices fall. And so the opposite of that is their yields, the interest they pay, go up. That's always been a tricky thing for listeners to comprehend. But if the prices of bonds fall, to get people to buy bonds, they have to raise the interest rate on a particular bond. So I won't buy a bond at 1%, but if I raise it to 2%, maybe you might. So that's how the yields go up. Bonds go down when that happens because the current bonds are paying the lower interest rate of yesterday. So just got to keep in mind that the price of a bond falls, their yields go up. When entire asset groups start to sell off in concert because of an event or a series of events occurring in similar securities, this is known as contagion. Bond contagion would be if the high-yield debt market came under stress, the junk bond market started to fall, and it has been under stress recently, the entire spectrum of bonds could start to experience contagion, and they could start to fall as well. Two reasons for this. One, investors may sell good bonds to pay off the losses in the bad bonds. And two, once bonds start to fall, people just start to think bonds are subject to bond problems. A good example of that a few years ago was Greece's debt problem. When Greece had some debt problems, it caused fear in the debt problems of the other Euro nations. And indeed, the contagion spread to the entire bond market in one form or another as the crisis progressed. Bond prices fell across the board, and therefore their yields or interest rates that they paid spiked. When Greece got its bailout, the bond market calmed and yields fell once more. So when Greece got its bailout, bonds started to rise in price, and therefore the interest that they had to pay to get you to buy one started to fall. So they kind of work in opposite of each other. Although we are far from that frightening scenario at this juncture, there may be some early alarm bells starting to ring, which you probably might at least be aware of. Auto loans have surpassed the $1 trillion mark, although that alone is not a cause for alarm. The makeup of those loans could be. In order to sell cars, auto companies are offering longer and longer terms, up to 7 years in some cases. And they're selling loans to lower credit type borrowers. We know that in the industry as subprime borrowers. More than $110 billion worth of auto loans in the last 6 months were classified as subprime. That out from Daily Reckoning. Subprime is borrowers with questionable credit and income. And $70 billion went to what is classified as deep subprime. I'll leave it to your imagination what that means. Of course, we've all seen all the auto ads offering no money down, zero interest and no monthly payments upon signing. Some programs offer cash back at signing. So you go in there and you sign your name and get cash back. It sounds a lot like the housing debacle a few years back, doesn't it? Where borrowers have little, if any, skin in the game. With subprime interest rates pushing 20%, blogcredit.com's figure, you have to ask yourself what kind of person would pay a 20% auto rate. What sort of person would pay that rate? And for how long would they pay it? Perhaps the kind of person that has little or no intention nor the means to pay it off. The companies that handle such loans, there are companies that specialize in auto loans, are seeing a spike in the rate of defaults. That from FT.com. Is there a pattern developing? A similar situation, which we have discussed on Money Matters many times, is occurring in the student loan sector. Student loans, out from Forbes, is topping the $1.3 trillion mark. This, like the auto sector, is no small potatoes. $1.3 trillion is no small potatoes. New programs on student loans. Pushed forward by the government. Are making it possible for students to off some loans onto the backs of taxpayers. And those loans that are doing that are on the rise, and students are taking advantage of those programs. The amount of student loan delinquencies, how many students are actually delinquent on their loans, like the auto loan sector, is also on the rise, that out from the Brookings Institute. With many students incurring many thousands if not tens of thousands, in debt. I spoke to someone who had a 200-something thousand-dollar student loan a couple of days back. Whoa. The task of paying off a loan may be a daunting one. With the rise in the number of online colleges giving out degrees, it may or may not be worth anything in the actual job market. Those online colleges you always see on TV. Students may not even have the income to pay their day-to-day living expenses, let alone a student loan. Now add to the student and auto loan problems an oil problem, where low oil prices is good for you and I as gas plunges in value, but a large number of companies have borrowed money to finance operations. And they did that when oil was over $100 a barrel. Now we look at oil in the mid-30s, down what, two-thirds from $100 a barrel? It's a significant drop in revenue. Imagine you owning a shop and your revenue dropped by two-thirds. Oil companies borrowing loans at $100 a barrel now, those loan payments are eating balance sheets. Revenues are in the dirt with oil prices so low and with the energy market encompassing more than 35% of the total bond market in some form or another. A chunk of these companies, which borrowed money at $100 a barrel, a couple of these companies are having problems making their loan payments, which will put even more stress on the bond markets in general. With three large groups of bonds heading for possible trouble, the auto loan sector, the student loan sector, and now the 35% or so of the total bond market in the oil sector, the entire bond market could be setting up for a massive bout of contagion where, as previously discussed, fear in one or two areas spreads to the entire bond arena. With interest rates on junk bonds on the rise as we speak, we could be seeing the early stages of another bond market blowout. How severe it might get or if it happens at all is anyone's guess, but the signs are concerning to a growing number of analysts, including this one. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back to talk about more on the economy. Tune to your economic forum, Money Matters, on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining us. Economic Forum Show 223, entitled New Year's Tidings. Thank you, thank you. We've covered corporate inversion before. definitely a hot button in the minds of the investing public. Corporate inversion is the merging of a U.S. company with a foreign one. Well, why would a company do that? The American company, and you merge with a company from somewhere else. The end result is the corporation that is in the United States officially changes its country of origin from the United States into another. We're seeing more and more of this corporate inversion. Often this is done to take advantage of the lower tax rates offered by other countries, as the U.S. corporate tax rate is the highest in the world. Corporate inversion is legal, of course. And the latest company doing it is the U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer. Now, they just merged with Ireland-based Allergan. The deal is worth about $160 billion. Out from the Wall Street Journal, and will create the largest drug company by sales, and it is the largest inversion deal undertaken to date. U.S. tax rate, also from the Wall Street Journal, for Pfizer here is estimated at about 35%. But as an Ireland-based company, its tax rate drops to 12.5%, so said the folks at Uncommon Wisdom Daily. The new company will be officially based in Dublin, Ireland, although Pfizer will still trade here in the U.S. under its current stock symbol, PFE. That's on the New York Stock Exchange. This inversion, like many others inversions that we've seen, could illustrate the corporate views on U.S. tax rates. When you compare U.S. tax rates to every other country in the world, mainly the gist of this inversion is, as long as rates here in the U.S. remain the highest in the globe, more companies will do what they do. Try and legalize and maximize shareholder profits. And if moving out helps the bottom line, more companies will probably consider it. Ireland's economy has not seen such activity since the boom days of the so-called Celtic Tiger. And this latest inversion, of course, it will have Ireland and Dublin welcoming Pfizer and its bottom-line profits to boot. Washington, of course, is not asleep on this sort of thing. And the catcalls of unfair and pay your fair share are being heard in the Ivy Halls by some lawmakers. Some elected officials point to inversion as proof the U.S. tax rate is onerous. Other officials say anyone leaving U.S. shores should pay up in spite of their moving. It is said money moves to friendlier shores, and this latest inversion by Pfizer may be proof of that. It is a hot button. I do get a lot of emails anytime I bring that up. And people will post on some of the economic websites that inversion is unfair. They should pay the fair share. Other people saying that's exactly an example of why we should lower to a U.S. tax rates. And just an update on the Dow, Thursday, December 7th, how it's reacting to the Fed raising rates. The Dow is down 168 as we speak. And what else is happening? Star Wars is coming out, right? Yeah, Star Wars is coming out today or tomorrow. I read some of the reviews on Star Wars, and it looked fairly positive. So we'll see how that movie takes. I haven't seen a few movies. I haven't seen Katniss Evergreen. What's that one? I forgot the name of that. The Hunger Games. I haven't seen that one. I'd like to see Bridge of Spies. That one I haven't seen. I'd like to see Everest, although that didn't last very long. I don't know if that one's any good or not. I've always had a fascinating with mountain climbing. You're tuned to Money Matters, your community radio station's economic forum. And I'd like to welcome you again. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me today. You can call me at 530-265-9555 and ask me some questions if you're listening to this live on Thursday, December 17th from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And 12 of the largest players in the interest swap arena interest rate swap arena. 12 of the largest players in the interest rate swap arena are being sued by the Chicago School Teachers Pension Fund. Out from Bloomberg News. Interest rate swaps. Yeah, that's another one of those holes in the investing where people say, huh? What's an interest rate swaps? Well, they're essentially large bets by large players to guard against rapid movements in interest rates, which could hurt returns on investments that are sensitive to rates, such as certain bonds, real estate investments, trusts, preferred stocks, and other types of what is typically regarded as fixed income investments, which is a favorite of pension plans and other large funds. We talked about market risk, where if a market drops, stocks in general could drop. There is something called interest rate risk. An interest rate risk where says that if interest rates move, certain asset classes may benefit or not benefit, get hurt by moves in interest rates as a general rule. So it is commonly thought that a rise in interest rates can cause stress in areas such as certain bonds, real estate investment trusts, preferred stocks, and other fixed income investments, incomes that pay a fixed rate of return. Because if interest rates rise and your interest rate that you're being paid is fixed, someone could buy a new fixed income security at a higher rate today if interest rates were raised yesterday than they could buy yesterday. So as a result, the market makers could adjust the price of your fixed income, which is paying a lower rate than today's rate, downward. That would have an effect on bonds and bond prices as well. Preferred securities, preferred stocks usually pay a fixed interest rate, and other areas that promise a fixed interest rate could be subject to interest rate risk. Now, the lawsuit brought by the School Teachers Pension Fund alleges that these large players in the interest rate swap arena blocked free access to the derivatives market where interest rate swaps are traded in an attempt to monopolize costs and profits. Now, this market is not small potatoes, to say the least. The total value of interest rate swaps outstanding, now listen carefully, total value of interest rate swaps, the bets, outstanding according to the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS, is about $320 trillion with a T. Now that's the notational value. How much is actually on the piece of paper? How much are we betting? But it is not the what we call the VAR, the value at risk. You may bet $1 trillion, but you're only risking $100 million. So the $1 trillion bet is the notational value of the bet, but you've only really got at risk $100 billion, which is, again, still no small potatoes, but that's an example. Certain financial institutions have paid billions of dollars to settle past claims of similar accusations, some without admitting guilt. So says Bloomberg, and one would have to ask, where there's smoke, is there fire? Question mark. Defendants of the suit, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Tradeweb, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, UBS Group, Barclays, PCL, Credit Suisse Group, AD, and Deutsche Bank, AG, declined to comment, concludes the Bloomberg article written by Joel Rosenblatt, dated November 25, 2015. This is not the first time large banking institutions have been accused of wrongdoing, of course, and it probably won't be the last. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back.
Gas.
and you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for joining me today. Yeah, there was some big news out earlier in the week. Shades of the 2008 and 2009 crisis came to my mind. And in a move that sent shivers through Wall Street investors, Third Avenue Management took the rare step of freezing withdrawals from its $780 million credit mutual fund. Out from USA Today earlier, Third Avenue Management froze withdrawals from its $780 million credit mutual fund. Backtrack to 2008 and 2009, and we find the primary, the reserve primary fund, one of the original, if not the original, money market fund, made a similar move by freezing redemptions and reducing redemption value to 9.97% of an investor's deposit. In other words, they lopped off 3% of your money if and when they got their money out. So that was back in 2008-2009, the reserve primary money fund froze redemptions and lopped off 3% of your funds. 8 years ago, BNP Paribas SA also helped spark a global financial crisis by freezing withdrawals from three investment funds because they couldn't fairly value their mortgage holdings. The beginning of the mortgage implosion. This extremely rare move earlier in the week by this latest fund, Third Avenue Management, was instigated as its bond portfolio consisted mainly of high-yield debt, commonly referred to as junk bonds. Of course, we spoke of the bond market stress earlier in the program. With yields soaring, which you now know means bonds falling, and investors selling off high-yield bonds, management felt it could not or would not sell off its assets at fire sale prices to meet redemptions. This could be another in a plethora of problems that may be materializing once again in the junk bond high-yield market. Traditionally, high-yield assets tend to sell off when markets get jittery. And as we previously talked about, with many high-interest loans made to energy companies who now face the music due to plunging oil prices, a wave of energy-related defaults may be stressing out this market as well. Did the Third Avenue Management Fund hold high-yield debt? Yes, it did. Was some of it oil-related? Don't know specifically. But my guess is maybe. Outflows from the U.S. high-yield bond funds, such as the Third Avenue Management Fund, are running at the fastest pace in more than a year. And yields on this market have jumped about 35% from 2014. Yields on bonds tend to rise as bonds sell off, as we mentioned before, and the price of bonds moves inversely from yields, so jumping rates mean bond prices once again are plunging. You must understand that. Get that in your head, that when bond prices fall, yields rise. Okay? As bond prices plunge, funds that hold these bonds, such as the Third Avenue Management Fund might have, these bonds lose value, resulting in dropping share prices. This can feed on itself, where as share prices drop, more investors sell, causing share prices to decline even further. The carnage in the high-yield bond market is drawing some noticeable attention. World-renowned investor Carl Icahn recently tweeted, "The meltdown in high yield is just beginning." Of course, Icahn has been betting against the high yield market, which means as junk bonds fall in value, the yields rise. And when that happens, he profits if he's betting against the high yield market. With oil prices continuing to plunge and the stock markets of the world under stress, especially today, they're down 173. More companies may find it harder to make their payments on borrowed monies. And here we're back again at the same ideas and the same situation we spoke of earlier. Keep in mind, this junk bond high yield market is where the riskier companies have to go to obtain financing. Riskier, I call that, running closer to the surface. As Warren Buffett used to say, you don't know who's swimming naked till the tide goes out. The market thrived, the junk bond market or the high yield market did thrive in recent years because the near zero interest rate environment that had existed, placed near zero by the Federal Reserve, enticed investors to go to other areas to try to get yield, to try to make some money. Lord knows we couldn't get much in a savings account in a zero interest rate environment. So you go to the higher yielding stuff. And were investors aware that the word high yield fund could contain junk or high yield debt? That debt yields more money because the companies that borrow that money are of lower credit rating, which is why they have to pay more money. It's a simple economic result there. Federal Reserve dropped the interest rates to 0.25% in an attempt to stimulate the economy and rescue the banking sector. Now they've started to raise rates. Could this put more stress on the bond market? An argument could be made, and indeed has been made by some analysts, including this one, that the ultra-low interest rates set by the Federal Reserve, and indeed central bankers around the world following suit, have encouraged investors. Did it encourage you to seek higher returns elsewhere? And that elsewhere has been one area, the high yield market, also known as the junk bond market. Investors have piled into high yield markets, making billions in monies available to companies seeking loans to continue their operations. The massive influx of capital seeking higher yields into these higher yielding funds placed a lot of money, billions of dollars, in junk bonds. And the junk bonds ended up in the hands of investors everywhere, including many retirement plans and pensions accounts. Masked under the term high income funds or other enticing names, many investors may have no idea they hold IOUs from risky companies, or at least companies on the lower end of the credit spectrum, and many of them possibly in the oil sector. And of course, that sector is fallen, bleeding red ink, because the price of oil has been cut by 2/3 from $100 down to where it is today. What's it, mid-30s? Now that the price of oil is at a recent historic low, some of these companies that are running close to the surface, as I say, maybe having a hard time making ends meet and paying these bills off. With rising defaults, the massive influx of capital into high yield market may now be slamming in reverse with a massive exodus. Did that cause Third Avenue Management to freeze withdrawals? They said they couldn't value their assets fairly, or at least would not fire sale them off. I've always said that the value of an object is only worth what somebody will pay for it. People would say to me, there's no market to sell my house. I got my house up for sale for $250,000 and there's no market for it. That is an untrue statement in my opinion. It is untrue. There is a market for the house, but not at $250,000. They say, well, there's no buyers out there. There's always buyers out there. Put a house on sale for $100, I guarantee you, you'll find a lot of buyers. I always draw a little diagram of a fishing boat fishing in a 200-foot lake, and the guy's got his bait down 10 feet, and he says there's no fish in the lake. Well, there's a lot of fish down at 150 feet, but your bait's not down there. So as you go down, there's more and more fish. Well, the same thing with house prices. there's no buyers at 250, well, start lowering your price. You'll find buyers. And the lower you go, the more buyers you'll find. That's a basic economic fact. Lower prices spurs more buying. So there are house buyers out there. There are plenty of them. You just have to lower your house to find them, lower the price on your house. They say, well, my house was worth $300. I can't find anybody to buy it. So the question would be, was it really worth $300? My opinion, it's only worth what people will pay for it. So Third Avenue Management says they won't fire sale off their bonds, and therefore, if people are asking for redemptions, Third Avenue Management says you can't redeem your funds because I'd have to sell off stuff at fire sale prices, which I possibly don't like to give you your money. The exodus of funds in the high-yield bond market is real, and yields are rising. If funds continue to flow out of the high-yield market, large losses may be in store for investors who hold these bonds. Maybe. I read an article today about an investor that thinks there's an advantage to higher yielding debt right now. It's also possible the high yield fallout spreads contagion to other types of bonds and even stock markets, such as we saw in the 08 and 09 crisis, where fear in one market led to sell-off in many others as the crisis progressed. As I mentioned before, high-yield bonds are traditionally the first to sell off when investors perceive risk in the markets, the proverbial canary in the coal mine. Is that bird beginning to sing as we speak? Do you hold high-yield bonds in your portfolio, mutual fund, or does your pension plan? Perhaps it's time you ask your investment professional what exactly is in your account and whether he or she is aware of the potential danger brewing in the high-yield debt markets. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Down almost into the close, about 182. Of course, things can change very quickly in the world of finance. And we look for reasons why this may be happening. And read you a brief article from Reuters out today by Charles Mikolajczak. Yes, he's Polish. U.S. stocks paced a decline in global equity markets on Thursday today. Of course, you may be hearing a recorded version of this at a later date. After the Federal Reserve's first interest rate hike in nearly a decade, continued pressure on oil weighed on the energy sector. The long-anticipated, though modest, increase in the federal funds rate also boosted the dollar to a fresh two-week high against a basket of major currencies, while Wall Street is on pace to snap a three-day winning streak. Economic data pointed to continued healing in the labor market. This is according to Chuck Mikolajczak, if I'm pronouncing it right, which could prompt more rate hikes from the Fed next year. However, the manufacturing sector continues to struggle, generating some nervousness among investors. Okay. Nervousness among investors. Well, with the Dow down 192 now, I guess that would be an opinion. Given the high level of volatility, says Chuck, and frankly a little bit of disappointment in some of the economic data and corporate profit data, it could be just more of a knee-jerk reaction after we've had a very sharp rally, said Jeremy Zirin, head of the investment strategy at UBS Wealth Management America, is in New York. And once again, Brent and U.S. crude oil prices fell and remain near multi-year lows on oversupply concerns and strength in the dollar. So do we like low oil prices? Well, it's nice. I can't remember. I was traveling around my car this week looking for $2 oil. Can't remember whether I saw it or not. But I'm paying about $2.49 now for premium. No doubt that the American public is benefiting from lower oil prices out of their pocketbooks. Now, if lower oil prices is causing the market to back off, of course, that could affect the pocketbook of your portfolio. So, you know, we have a plus in one area where gas is down. That's good for the working man. But then the market's down, and that might not be good for the people invested in the stock markets. So I always say, be careful what you wish for. Falling oil prices is good, and people love it. But according to many analysts, it could be dragging down the stock market, and it could be dragging down the bond market to boot. And that might not be so good, because if the bond market and the stock market goes into severe correction, that could drag down the U.S. economy. So we have to definitely be careful what we wish for. You have been listening to Money Matters, your economic show, your economic forum on your community radio station, wherever you're hearing the show. Aired live December 17, 2015, from 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This has been show 223, 223rd edition of Money Matters, entitled "You New Year Tidings." Of course, I didn't give you much New Year's tidings today, did I? But it's always a pleasure for me to bring the economic news in a simple format where you can understand it. And thank you always for listening. And always keep in mind, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendation or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me today. God bless. Have a great day. Stay tuned to your community radio station for more fine programming.
This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. You can order past shows or comment on our show by sending me an email at mark@moneymanagementradio.com. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.
get back.